It is a crazy time to be a developer or an IT pro. It's just so much opportunity. Did folks watch the Build stream? Did you watch? So a lot of exciting news out of Build, and we have many of those people here as well. So you can talk to them yourselves. You can see what they've been talking about. It's been a few weeks on, and so we're sort of letting everything sink in from all of the Build announcements. And I know I was there, and I was overwhelmed as well. This afternoon's keynote is Mr. Hanselman, Scott Hanselman. We're talking about open web and how the cloud plays into that and everything that Microsoft's doing in that space. Tomorrow morning, Douglas Crockford, one of the old men of the internet, and a very, very nice, very grandfatherly type, but a guy who knows internet technology backwards and forwards and has always had some important thoughts in that space. It'll be a great conversation. And then on Thursday, Dan Holm, back at Microsoft, a SharePoint guy, talking about how SharePoint's going to evolve. So feel free to catch that as well. That's about all I need to cover. So the only other thing I'd ask is we have made this ballroom by assembling a few session rooms. So when this keynote is over, if you can move out fairly quickly, we can get the session started on time. It's always a drag race to fly walls around and so forth, and we don't want to kill anybody in the process. Turns out that's bad for business. Just from experience. I don't know why I know that. Moving along to building the intelligent cloud, my friend Scott Guthrie, I met 15 years ago, a disturbingly long time ago, when he was fresh out of Duke, and he's literally worked from the beginning to the end at Microsoft now. Today he is an executive vice president, and he's the guy who's making Azure amazing, and I'm super excited to have him here, so please put your hands together for Scott Guthrie.
Can people hear me okay? Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming out to this conference and for showing up bright and early today. We're really looking forward to spending the time with you. I have a whole bunch of folks from my team that will be doing breakout sessions throughout the week, and I'm excited to be able to kick this conference off officially by talking about some of the things that we're doing around the cloud and hopefully how the cloud can really change the way you do development, make you even more successful in terms of the projects that you work on, and really even more valuable for the organizations you work for. And so I will talk a little bit about some of the customers that are using the cloud, but more importantly, we'll be doing lots and lots of demos, and my hope is to leave everyone here today going, I can do all that too. Everything I'm gonna show here on stage, you can actually do yourself using the bits that are publicly available, and hopefully kind of inspire you to try it out and do some cool things with it. So how many people here are using the cloud today? How many people here are using Azure? How many people are using Amazon? How many people are using GoDaddy? It was a trick. One of those is not the cloud. But anyway, cool. Generally what I find sometimes when I come to events is when I ask that question, there's still most of the hands don't go up yet. And I'm not sure sometimes whether or not people haven't had their coffee in the morning yet and they're afraid to raise their hand. Or, you know, more generally, people are going, yeah, I've heard about the cloud, but I don't yet, I'm not using it, and I'm not sure quite why yet. How can I convince my boss, or how can I convince my company that I should? And so one of the things I thought I'd do is just start off this morning by talking a little bit about why cloud, to try to motivate things before we dive into all the details of what it is and what you can do with it. When people ask me, you know, why should I care about the cloud, there's usually kind of a couple things that I tell people. The cloud gives you speed and agility, enables you to move faster. It gives you elastic scale, gives you cost savings, and ultimately it really enables new business scenarios, and the combination of which ends up being pretty exciting and pretty special in terms of what you can do. And I thought I'd just walk through a couple of customer examples for each to kind of tell a little bit of the story in terms of why they moved to the cloud and some of the benefits that they're getting from it. You know, this first one here in terms of that I thought I'd just talk about is sort of speed and agility. This is kind of one of the things that I think people, when they first move to the cloud, after a little bit of time coming up to speed with it, kind of go, wow, I didn't know I could actually move as fast as I am right now versus how I used to do it before. And a great example of this in terms of one of the customers that's been on stage with us and talked about their experiences moving to the Microsoft cloud and to Azure specifically is 3M. And 3M builds, you know, literally tens of thousands of products and does some, you know, a whole bunch of different markets and product capabilities that they build. And one of the things that they did about a year and a half ago was acquire a company that they wanted to integrate very, very quickly into 3M. And one of the things that they did was they sat down with a new company, they sat down with their existing IT organization and tried to figure out, okay, how do we stitch together all of the different systems so that we can enable our sales reps to get going as quickly as possible. And they realized, you know, because of a whole bunch of reasons, security, networking, et cetera, it was gonna take them quite a while to basically move all of their infrastructure into the 3M network. And so one of the things they kicked off was a project that they started literally on a Thursday or Friday and worked all over the weekend to basically see, you know, could we use the cloud as a way to basically bridge our organizations and put together a quick mobile web-based solution that could talk to both and be able to provide their sales reps with a single view that could span across them. And by the time the company came in on Monday, they'd actually had something up and running. It wasn't perfect. They still needed to do more tuning, but there was enough that they could actually put it in front of someone and say, try this out, does this actually work? And they found that it did, and it basically allowed them to onboard incredibly fast. And once they got to that point, they suddenly realized, wow, we can actually do this even more. And you know, starting to move more and more of their core IT systems to be able to leverage this kind of cloud-based environment to also be able to pick up and take advantage of that speed and agility. What I thought I'd do is, you know, rather than prattle on a bunch about speed and agility, let's actually just escape out of PowerPoint and show some demos of a couple examples of what I mean when I say kind of speed and agility. So, first question I want to ask people here, how long does it take you to stand up a new SQL database when you're working on a project? Months. Okay, can anyone beat months? Does anyone take years? I went to one event and they said 18 months. And I thought that sounded like a bad place to work. But cool. So how many people, weeks, months? I heard months. Weeks, days, hours? Days, okay, lots of days, head nodding. Anyone can do it in hours? A few people. Anyone do it in minutes? Oh, a few. Can anyone do it in seconds? One person, okay. I hope you're an Azure customer. Anyway. So yeah, let's actually just walk through what that looks like in an Azure-based world. And you know, let's stand up a new database here. So I'm gonna go ahead, I'm using the Azure Management Portal here, and I'm gonna go ahead and create a new SQL database. And what do you wanna call this database? Longest part. Longest part, okay. Not sure why it's called longest part, but okay. I can make it blank, I can start from somewhere, I can choose where in the world I wanna run it. So I can change any of these settings, we'll go ahead and hit create. And this basically just kicked off a deployment task to Azure and said stand up a new SQL database in the west region of the US. This can take anywhere from 10 seconds, usually when I'm in my office, up to about 60 seconds when I'm on a keynote. So we'll see how long it takes. I can basically see the status here. And we'll come back to this as soon as it's done. While I'm creating a database, let's also create a virtual machine. And just like I could say file new database, you'll notice here I can go ahead and create a virtual machine. I create Windows Server, I could create Linux. I could create any number of different virtual machines. And again, the same kind of experience that you saw earlier for creating a database where I basically just need to fill in names, locations of where I want to deploy it around the world. And you know, in the case of virtual machines, I can do some more advanced networking and storage options. Basically just hit create and I'll basically go ahead and stand up a VM, you know, literally again in minutes. Here's one I created earlier, just to kind of show what a finished VM looks like. You can see here, once it's stood up, I can manage it. I can see what its CPU utilization looks like. I can go ahead and see, you know, who logged into it, who actually made any changes to the environment. I can even click the boot diagnostics. This is kind of a cool new feature we have built into Azure, where we'll actually go out to the host that this virtual machine is running on, and we'll actually bring back literally the dashboard or what the image would look like if you actually plugged it in a VGA port into it. We don't actually have VGA ports in our server. This is what Windows Server looks like. You'd see the Linux console log if you're running in a Linux environment. And you know, if I want to go ahead now and sort of remote into this machine, I could just go ahead and hit create. Double click this. This is a machine now running, I think this is in the western half of the US, with a full Windows Server VM that I can basically now provision, manage, and do anything I want to. You'll notice while we were looking at our VM here, our SQL database also deployed successfully. So let's go ahead and take a look at what that is. So you'll notice here, if I come back, oops. Remember, longest part, that was the SQL database we created. That's it running right there. And literally in a matter of, I don't know, about 2 minutes, we basically created a SQL database anywhere around the world, provisioned it literally from scratch with a new name. We showed how to create a virtual machine. We RDP'd into a virtual machine. And we're less than 5 minutes into the keynote. That kind of gives you an example of just how fast you can move in this environment. And if you don't want the resource and you say, hey, longest part is kind of a weird name, I could rename the name, or if I don't need it anymore, I can just hit delete. And what this is going to go ahead and do is basically deprovision that database. Poof, it's gone. If I hit refresh now, it's no longer there. I'm no longer paying for it. That gives you kind of an example of the speed with which you can actually operate and move for everything. The other thing that's cool about this is not only can you do it through a GUI, so you can drive everything through our management portal, but you can also automate and script it all. And so an example here, I'd show it for the database, but I just realized I deleted it. Let's go ahead and look at that virtual machine again. And so again, I can manage everything and all the settings here, like I would through the management portal. But there's also this sort of option, which we added recently, called Export Template, which we've put on every resource group within Azure, which basically manages all your resources. And one of the cool things you can do with the resource group option is this will actually go ahead and script out for me a nice little declarative JSON file that has all the settings for the particular resource that I just created, whether it's a database, whether it's a virtual machine, or anything. And so I can basically check that into source control and manage it. And then it also, if I click on the tab here, shows me the PowerShell script to automate everything we just did through the GUI. I can go ahead and look at the CLI. So if I wanted to run this, say, instead of PowerShell from the command line or from a bash script in a Unix environment, again, this shows me everything I need to do in order to recreate this. And if I want to programmatically drive everything just through an application so I can script out everything through code instead of having a shell script, here's the .NET API and classes that I'd actually use to exactly create what I just actually showed through the GUI on stage. And I can basically copy and paste any of that, automate it all, and have, again, a complete integrated environment where I can stand up anything, I can delete anything, I can automate everything, and I can do that literally just within a browser with resources anywhere around the world. So when I talk about agility, that's sort of an example of that. How many people here have ever stood up a SharePoint server farm? Great. How long did that take? Days? A long time, someone said. Someone said it's still going. I like that. in the same way here that you can kind of create individual resources inside Azure or inside a cloud environment, the other thing that's kind of powerful is when you take all the things I just showed here, the ability to create VMs, the ability to automate things, to create databases, and be able to kind of stand all that up, you can move from managing those individual atoms and basically manage more like applications, like a SharePoint server farm, as an example. And so you can create your own templates that make it really easy, as an example, to automate a SharePoint server farm creation. Or, what you could also do is you could take advantage of one that we've pre-built for you. So you notice here, there's a SharePoint 2013 HA farm option. I can go ahead and click. And again, just like creating a database or creating a virtual machine, this basically has a nice little wizard that I can use, which will allow me to not only to kind of specify a SharePoint name, I can also connect it to an Active Directory, I connect to a virtual network, I can configure all my database settings for high availability if I wanted to. And literally in about 5 minutes, stand up the automation of a new SharePoint server farm, and I'll show you an example of what one of those looks like. This is one here, and you can see these are all the individual virtual machines for that SharePoint server farm. So I've got app front ends, I've got database, I've got domain controllers, and for any one of those, I can basically click on that resource and basically now zoom into that individual virtual machine. And this is the VM view of it. I can see what's happening within it, and if I wanted to, I could basically connect it and use, again, all those same techniques I showed with virtual machines to be able to manage that. And now, instead of it taking weeks or days or a long time or it's still going, You know, I could basically literally in about 5 minutes kick off a SharePoint server farm being created and, you know, literally in less than an hour have a fully configured environment stood up in an HA form anywhere around the world. So that's sort of a little bit in terms of just highlighting some of the, what you can do in terms of speed and agility. And, you know, as you kind of get more familiar with the environment, you can move even faster. And again, that's probably one of the biggest benefits you get from the cloud is being able to take advantage of that and no longer be constrained by how long does it take me to get physical hardware, how long is it going to take me to stand up an environment. You can now basically unblock and you can basically move, you know, again, with much less friction and much more agility. Now, what's cool about this is it's not only kind of fast and easy, but it really enables you to tackle massive problems. And so you can actually not just create one VM, you not just create 100 VMs, not create 1,000 VMs. You can create, if you want to, hundreds of thousands or even millions of VMs anywhere around the world and tackle any size problem. And this ability to kind of scale up to whatever you need to is, again, another big benefit that the cloud gives you and really opens up huge possibilities. These are just a couple of examples of customers in different industries that are doing that today with Azure. AccuWeather is an example. I'll show a video in just a second. Provides, you know, real-time weather alerts and weather forecasting services, not just to consumers, but they also be able to provide their services to, I think, 200 of the Fortune 500 companies out there, so they can provide weather prediction for things like supply chains or even theme parks and others that want to know what the weather is going to be like and how do they plan accordingly. And they store today, they were on stage with me just a few weeks ago, 2 trillion individual storage objects inside Azure that they're basically using as part of their weather calculations and predictions and spanning across tens of thousands of virtual machines running all over the world. NBC Sports has been a big user of Azure for several years now, and they basically broadcast more than 3,000 sporting events live every single year using our cloud. And so they do both the encoding in the cloud as well as the actual broadcast and transmission and streaming of it to devices all over the world. The Olympics, as an example, this summer will be encoded and transmitted digitally entirely using Azure, where they literally don't have any on-premise encoder, they don't have any on-premise streaming origin server. Everything's being done in the cloud and being able to kind of run at massive scale. And then Milliman, in a completely different industry, provides actuarial insurance calculations. And so if you're someone has insurance or in a financial institution, you can basically upload jobs to Milliman, who basically will run it across, in some cases, millions of cores of machines that basically can calculate before a market opens where is your portfolio at risk, where do you need to hedge, and you know, where do you currently stand with your various forecast models. And each of these, again, is a great example of kind of taking advantage of the cloud to tackle problems that just weren't possible 10 years ago in existing hardware environments. So let's go ahead and watch a quick video of AccuWeather talking about their solution and some of the things that they're doing with it.
We're looking for above normal snowfall.
A major storm system.
Widespread travel problems going to be a concern all throughout the day.
The promise of the cloud is that every individual and organization has unlimited access to information at any time, no matter where they are.
It's been a beautiful...
Weather affects us all. The Microsoft Cloud gives our team the power to instantly deliver critical information to people whenever they need it. Here at AccuWeather, we get up to 10 billion data requests every day from over 200 countries and in 100 different languages. The Microsoft Cloud allows us to scale up so we can handle that volume. I remember a woman, and she said, "The AccuWeather app woke me up in the night with a severe weather alert, and I got my family to safety, and you literally saved me from a tornado." And to us, that feels really good.
And what's cool about this scale is not only can you scale up to take advantage of massive resources like you saw AccuWeather doing, but because you only pay for what you actually use, you can actually dynamically scale up and scale down these resources, not just to take advantage of large projects, but also to save a whole bunch of money. If you think about your traditional apps and environments that you work in, you know, if you look at the CPU utilization, you look at the raw utilization of the apps, you typically see a pattern that looks like this, where it's basically, you know, fairly up and down throughout the day, where the dips might be in the middle of the night, they might be weekends, points in time where you're not running at 100%, and the peaks might be, you know, things like end of month reports or end of quarter reports where you need massive capability and capacity. And in a traditional world, you end up paying for the utilization of effectively peak plus some percentage that you want to keep in buffer. And everything in that kind of light blue shaded area ends up being unused capacity that you end up having to pay for because you've got idle hardware that's sitting, say, in your data centers. And one of the things that's cool about the cloud is instead of paying for all that unused capacity, you can instead scale up and scale down elastically through things like auto-scale rules so that you can basically always keep enough capacity on hand for what you need to do and not have to keep a whole bunch of it idle. And that translates into significant cost savings that can ultimately save, you know, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars depending on the size of the organization. And then the last thing kind of exciting about the cloud is not just cost, not just scale, not just agility, but the fact that it enables you to do things that are fundamentally new, to tackle new problems and be able to kind of reach new customers in a much better way. And you know, I think one of the things that we see as exciting is people taking advantage of things like advanced analytics, like Internet of Things, soon virtual reality, to really build new solutions in fundamentally new ways that kind of delight their customers and enable you to kind of, you know, provide a way that you can reach and grow new business for your organizations, and ultimately that makes you even more valuable. Companies like GE Healthcare, for example, are running entirely in Azure and providing medical services to hospitals and doctors all over the world. Companies like BMW are basically running their new Internet of Things capability that are built into their cars so they can provide a connected car experience where they have a mobile experience with phones and tablets that people can use in their pocket, and then it's integrated directly to the dashboard of each BMW vehicle so they can provide real-time streaming and richer experiences to all their end users. And Jet.com is a new retailer here in the US. It's a startup. They basically went from zero to having their app built out in about 12 months. It runs entirely in Azure. And you know, they're looking to kind of disrupt the traditional retail business and provide new ways that they can go ahead and deliver goods and services in a fundamentally new way. All these things kind of are possible because of taking advantage of the cloud and all the capabilities it provides. So if someone asks you, why should you care about cloud? Hopefully, you know, these are four reasons that I think pretty much every organization out there would want to take advantage of. And I think the message also I want to leave for everyone here is, you know, the great thing about the cloud also is it makes technology even more powerful, and it makes you even more valuable to the organizations you work with, because you can now harness all this power to do even more and do things even better for your organization. And this, you know, enables your organization to be even more successful and enables you to be driving behind that. So Azure is Microsoft's cloud computing platform. And you know, our goal with Azure is, as I kind of talked about in some of those themes, to enable you to move faster and fundamentally be able to achieve more. Azure is what's called a hyperscale cloud. It runs all over the world. These sort of blue dots here on this map represent what we call Azure regions, which are basically clusters of multiple data centers that we co-locate together that you can basically go and deploy your applications and code into. So we use the portal there to create VMs and databases. I was deploying into several of those different blue regions around the US. And when you deploy, there's a little drop-down. You can basically choose which of these regions you want to deploy into. With Azure today, we've got 30 regions around the world. To put that in perspective, that's more regions than Amazon and Google combined. And we're in more countries now than any other cloud provider is as well. And so whether you want to deploy here in the East Coast of the US, or Central US, Northwest, Northeast, South, Central, West, you can do that literally immediately. But you can also deploy to places like mainland China, where we're the only cloud provider currently operating there, or India, where we're also the only cloud provider operating there, or anywhere else around the world, and reach a global market as well. Each of these blue regions is really big. Since we're on the East Coast of the US, I thought I'd show a picture here. This is one of our East Coast regions of Azure. And so you can see this is a cluster of multiple data centers. That little dot in the bottom right with a circle around it is a really large truck to try to give you some sense of scale in terms of how big these facilities are. This is the same facility from a different angle and shows you the build out that's currently underway. This set of data centers will ultimately be about 2 miles long when fully constructed, and it will host more than 500,000 servers. And the cool thing is you can deploy your applications immediately to all of those. And again, take advantage of all the features I just showed to be able to leverage that kind of scale and power to be able to drive your applications and your workloads now as well. When people ask, you know, why Azure? What makes you, why do people choosing you? You know, I often talk about three core things. One is Azure provides sort of maximum choice and flexibility. In the choice and flexibility side, you know, that's true not just from an operating system and application stack perspective, but also in terms of where you deploy and how you use it around the world. We support pretty much every operating system and every application stack and technology out there. And that's sort of an important thing that we're trying to do with Azure is not have Azure just be the Microsoft cloud or the Windows cloud, but really be the cloud for all workloads and all applications. And so whether it's Linux-based, whether it's Hadoop-based, whether it's using Ansible or Chef or new container technologies, yeah, we support all of them and support them really well built into the environment. We also, from a choice and flexibility perspective, we're unique in that we're the only hyperscale cloud vendor that also enables you to not only build and run applications that run inside our data centers, but also enable you to run and build applications in your own data centers as well. Because we recognize the fact that even though the cloud has lots of benefits, it's not necessarily for every single workload out there. And for large organizations, often, people have existing footprint that's going to take years or decades to be able to migrate into a cloud-based environment. And so one of the things that we do is we have something we call Azure Stack, which is a version of Azure that you can actually deploy and run on your own servers and your own hardware in whatever data center you want or any service provider data center that you have, and enables you to basically have that same management portal that you saw, the same management scripting experience that I showed you, and the same core application services. And you can basically now build applications that you can deploy in Azure or you can deploy on-prem. And again, this gives you kind of maximum choice and flexibility in terms of how you build your services, how you build your applications, and ultimately where you run them around the world. Our goal with Azure is really to provide kind of an enterprise-ready environment. And that's not just about technology, it's also about what are the set of services in terms of support that we can provide, the support professionals we provide, the partner ecosystem we can deliver that can enable you to kind of integrate all of your applications and run them in a reliable way inside the cloud. And you know, some of those services have kind of helped drive a huge number of organizations to adopt Azure. We've got about 85% of the Fortune 500 now taking advantage of the Microsoft cloud. These are just some of the logos of companies running in Azure today. And you can see they kind of span the gambit in terms of all types of sizes, all types of industries, and running all types of solutions. And then, the key thing that we've always tried to focus on at Microsoft, and where I'm going to spend the bulk of my keynote now going forward, is around productivity. How do we try to make Azure the place where you can build things the fastest, how you can be the most successful, and where we can kind of make it so that you can deliver solutions easier and faster and better than ever before. And as part of Azure, we have a huge set of capabilities built in that you can leverage, not just things like virtual machines that I showed, but higher level capabilities like web and mobile services, Internet of Things capabilities, microservice-based architectures, data and analytics solutions, cognitive services, so we can even do things like facial recognition and voice recognition as a service that you can weave into your applications in order to be able to build solutions better and faster than ever before. And all these capabilities combined, again, enable you to do some amazing stuff, and it's really led to some pretty explosive growth that we're seeing right now in Azure around the world. We've got about 120,000 new customer subscriptions in Azure being created now every single month. There's 1.6 million SQL databases now running in production in Azure. I guess 1,006,001 based on the demo we just did earlier. We have 2 trillion IoT event messages now flowing through Azure every single week. 600 million users and over 5 million organizations in the Azure Active Directory system, which provides single sign-on identity that you can weave into all of your cloud-based solutions. 4 million developers using our Visual Studio Online services. I talked a lot about enterprises, but I'm also going to highlight a number of kind of great startup examples throughout my keynote. And in fact, more than 40% of our Azure revenue today comes from actually startups and software developers selling services and plays a huge component in terms of the overall makeup of people taking advantage of our cloud. So what I'm going to do now is basically walk through in a couple of these different higher-level advanced workload categories, a couple of the cool examples of services that you can take advantage of, talk about what people are doing with them, and again, hopefully inspire you to give it a try and build your own set of solutions as part of it. And let's start by talking about web and mobile. How many people here build web and mobile-based applications? Great. We've got a whole bunch of capabilities built into Azure that I'll be demoing just a little bit that make building web and mobile solutions much easier and, again, enable you to move much quicker and with much more agility. And one of the things that we're trying to do not only is to build these solutions with Azure in the cloud, but also to basically build out the development tool capabilities so that you can use any development tool, but in particular, take advantage of the Visual Studio family to be able to build those same solutions and take advantage of Azure in a nice, seamless, integrated way. And one of the things that we've been hard at work at the last couple months has been expanding the Visual Studio family to include not just the Visual Studio IDE that we all know, and I think most of the people in this room take advantage of today, but also building out a new lightweight code editor we call VS Code that just went GA last week. And it's free and available to use, not just on Windows, but also on Mac and Linux systems as well. And enables you to have kind of a really code-optimized editing experience that includes things like debugging, includes things like IntelliSense for a wide variety of different languages and options, and enables you to build some really great solutions. And then with our Visual Studio Team Services offering, we now also have a set of back-end developer SaaS services that you can leverage that can do things like source control repositories, build and testing capabilities, Kanban board management, release management, and more that, again, will allow you to kind of build solutions regardless of whether web, mobile, or others and be able to kind of move with even more agility and speed across a team environment. One of the things that we've been missing with the Visual Studio family that we're really excited about expanding on over this past month has been a great way to build native mobile applications across all devices. Visual Studio obviously has had a great solution for building Windows-based applications, but one of the things we know people want to do is also build great iOS and Android applications and do them in a native mobile way, where they can take full advantage of all the APIs and capabilities on those mobile platforms. Last month, we acquired a great company called Xamarin, which provides a huge set of offerings that's a really compelling way to do just that and enable you to build these awesome native mobile solutions. Xamarin's used by a whole bunch of companies out there today. This is just a small sampling in terms of some of the organizations that are using Xamarin-based technologies. I think it's over in the hundreds of the Fortune 500 that are actually using and deploying it already. And it includes not just enterprises, but also great companies like Slack or Pinterest and others that are taking advantage of Xamarin as well in order to build their consumer-facing solutions in addition. And what I thought I'd do is just show a quick video of a couple of the customers talking about how they're using Xamarin and why they're using it today.
Xamarin allows our team to get to market faster than our competition.
Xamarin is a platform that works for native development.
Can we turn up the volume backstage?
On iOS, Android, and Windows.
It allows us to not need to focus on all the different development tools, but allow us to write a better code and provide better features.
Xamarin Test Cloud allows us to push our app to over 2,000 real devices, both mobile phones and tablets, across a matrix of operating systems and device types so that we can get the kind of coverage we would never be able to support in-house. Pinterest is a very visual tool to be testing, so Xamarin makes sense in terms of its live devices testing the physical app just like a user would use it. Working with Xamarin Test Cloud is giving us the confidence to get to our next 100 million users.
With 2.3 million daily active users, there are a lot of people that rely on Slack. Finding issues and bugs and being able to report that really shows the value of the automation that we're building.
The Xamarin Test Cloud had the ability to run our automation against a huge, huge device library that they offered, as well as the reporting back that Xamarin gives us after the tests are complete is very detailed, allows us to look at different types of app usage data, battery usage data, and then of course looking at the actual stack traces of failures and logs was extremely important as well.
We have a great collaboration with LEGO, which is trying to enable students to find that love of engineering through robotics. The combination of Visual Studio, .NET, and Xamarin provide that very scalable bridge from desktop to mobile.
If I can write one piece of code and it works everywhere, that makes me very happy.
Xamarin is sick. It's crazy the kind of stuff you can do with this product.
Yeah, one of the things that Xamarin provides is the ability, as I mentioned, to build native mobile solutions now using C# that work across all platforms. So you can build them for iOS, you can build it for Android, you can build it for Windows. And you can write directly to the underlying API in all those different systems. So there's no API you can't take advantage of. There's no capability you can't leverage using now C#. And at the same time, you can also create libraries that allow you to share code across those systems as well. So you can also take advantage of maximum code reuse across all those different environments. And what I thought I'd do is invite James Montemango from Xamarin on stage to actually show off a demo of it. And I have to give a little context here. We had a different demoer that was supposed to be demoing today who's currently stuck in Houston because of the weather travel. And so I found out at 9:40 last night that there was gonna be no way he was gonna get here. And so I called someone back in Seattle and said, is there anyone here in Orlando that could help demo? They said, no, but there's someone here in Seattle, and he's headed to the airport right now. And so James not know he was gonna be here today. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. No, it's so good to be here. It was a lovely, lovely red eye with a lady sitting next to me with the brightest iPad I've ever seen. I just threw that blanket over my face, and I'm like, all right, let me get an hour. Perfect. So what we wanted to, well, good, we're on my machine. Perfect. So I've been doing this for 5 years, crafting beautiful mobile applications across all the platforms, and it's such an exciting time to be a mobile developer, especially using Visual Studio and C#. How many of you guys are C# .NET developers? Any of you guys and gals? Perfect, you chose correctly. All right, so let's get going. I wanted to start off with a very simple example, just kind of creating a brand new application from scratch. What does that look like? So I'm in here, Visual Studio 2015, and just like always, for the last 15 years of my life, project new file. And inside of here, when you have Xamarin installed in Visual Studio, it's all included up. You'll have some Android templates. So if you want to build an Android Wear application for the watch, or a standard application, you can. Then you have iPad and iPhone apps. So I'm just going to go ahead and do a single view app here. And Visual Studio says app10 is a perfect name, so let's go with that. Now what this is going to do is just spin up my very first iOS application, and we have great documentation on how to get started. So I'll kind of walk through what we have over here. Is essentially you have your resources, your properties, and you have a few files in here, such as a storyboard file and a view controller. And as you can see in your resources, it's going to look very familiar. You have system, core, XML, your .NET libraries that you know and love. But down here, what's more important is this Xamarin iOS, and that's all the bindings, everything basically, every API in iOS. So let's build out something really quick here. I'm going to open this main storyboard file. This essentially is a complete overview of my application, and as you can see, it's beautiful, stunning here. And I can go, and this is kind of a generic view. iOS, you can stretch and pull and do a bunch of things. It's just like WinForms. But I'm going to go ahead and just do something for like iPhone 4. So we'll make it a little bit more viewable here. And what I want to do is show off maybe just dragging some controls. So I have my toolbox over here, and here's a nice little label. There we go, and I'll make it a little bit bigger. And then let's throw down a few more controls. I'm going to throw down a map view. So there we go, it's a nice little map. I really like the Apple Maps. They have a great API to actually do anything really quick, especially for demos. We'll make that a little bit bigger. And you can pin these, and it'll auto-size. So if you rotate, everything's included in there. If you've any done any iOS development, auto-sizing and scaling, all that's done for you. I'm going to add one more thing, a button in here. And there we go. There's a nice little button. And now what we can do, just like we've always done in the past, is we can come down over to our properties pane. And we have names, we have layouts and events. So this label, we'll call it my label. For the map, we'll call it my map. And for the button, well, we'll just call it my button. Sounds great. And of course, you have all the properties. Anything that you want to adjust, you can do. So what we'll do here is we'll go to the code behind. Every single one of these pages calls a view controller. So here's the code behind for the view controller, and it's some lifecycle events for the application. So what I'll do is I'll come inside of here and I'll go into my view did load when it's actually loaded on the screen. And what we'll do is we'll have the map, and when we move around the map, we'll update the label. So I'll say my map dot region changed. I'll do plus equals. And I could insert something, but let's just do like an async, you know, sender, args, nice little lambda. There we go. That's the kind of code I like to write. And of course, Visual Studio is like, hey, I haven't done anything yet. Actually, you don't even need async. There we go. We'll just do that. So what we'll do is we'll say, well, what's my region? So my region here, we'll say equals my map dot region dot center. So there we go. So this is actually a, if I hover over it, that's a That's a MK map view. It's a native iOS map that I have access to. Now I can come in and say my label, which is a UI label, so native iOS label.txt. Let's just go ahead and use some string interpolation, some C sharp, and say you are at, and we'll say region.latitude and region.longitude. Perfect. So that's like one thing I could do, and I could move around the map. But I said, let's just do a little bit more. Scott said I had a few extra minutes, so I'm kind of excited about that. So I'm just going to wing it here, and we added this button. And like every good button, you should be able to double-click it, ideally. Uh-oh. That's what happens when you try to get a little fancy with it. Or you come back to your code behind, you say, my button, dot touch up inside. That's how you do it. We'll make this one async, and we'll send some sender args in here. Now, what I thought would be cool is not only do they just like update the location, but what if we took that latitude and longitude and got an address out of it? So let's actually bring in some namespaces. That's what I love. I can say using system dot, and here's all of my system namespaces that are in here, runtime security text. But I'm going to bring in core location, which is a core iOS API. I'm going to bring in MapKit, just so we have a few namespaces in there. Now what I can do over here is I can say var, we'll get that region again, my map dot region dot center. So that's going to be the latitude and longitude I have access to. Then what I'll do is I'll say, let me grab some addresses. Addresses. And I'm going to go ahead and, well, first, we're going to create this thing called a geocoder. Say new geocoder. That's what's going to allow me to take the latitude and longitude and geocode it. So we're going to go ahead and say await geocoder.reverse geolocation async. So what we did is we took the core iOS APIs, and if we could .netify them and async await them, we did it. So no need for a callback, anything like that. And we'll have tons of overrides that are available in here, but we'll say region. Dot latitude and region dot longitude, and that's going to give me back a whole list of addresses that are available to me. And that should work. Ah, I need to do one more thing. Yes, new CO location. There we go. So we need to transform that into a CO location for it. There we go. Cool. So now what we can do is we'll say, hey, you know what? Let's go ahead and place a pin right onto the map. So let's say my map dot add annotation. And we'll add a new MK point annotation. And just like with any, you know, regular information, we'll just go in and we'll say coordinate equals this region. And then we're going to say title. And then we're just going to set whatever the title is. And we need to actually get into those addresses there. And what we can see if we hover over the var is it's a CL placement array, essentially. So this is going to give me like street address, zip code, things like that. So we'll use a whole bunch of fancy C# 6 goodness to make sure that we don't have any bad things in there. We'll say unknown. Cool. Unknown, if I can spell. Cool. So that's pretty cool. Tons of awesome C# 6 running up my iOS code. And now at this point, what I would do if I want to run it is I would switch over to my Mac and be all crazy and do all this stuff. But what I really want to do is just kind of come up here and say, well, I was designing for the iPhone 4S and just hit debug. I want to show you guys something that we've been releasing to kind of make productivity even easier. So what this is going to do is it's going to build up my iOS application. There we go. And this is our iOS simulator for Windows, enabling you to never leave Visual Studio or your PC, and actually right here have the entire application ready to go. Even better yet, check this out. I'm going to use my finger, and I'm just going to go ahead and move that map around automatically. That's pretty cool. But check this out. Because what if I took two fingers and just got ahead and pinched in there? Boom. That's the only iOS simulator to do that. But check this out. Let's add some breakpoints. And that's what I love about this. We'll add some breakpoints in here. All right, so now when we actually do that touch up inside, I'm going to go ahead and touch that button. Boop. I get my geocoder. I can see what my region is. We can see our latitude and longitude. We'll continue on. We'll go out. We have a whole list of addresses that are coming in right there. This is some lake that I randomly hit, I think. And there we go. Now we have a pin right there on our iOS application that I built in a few minutes. Pretty cool. So now you may be wondering, like, how do I get started building these applications? I could build the same application over on Android, which is my favorite platform. And that would be like, oh, here's another designer built right into Visual Studio. But what we did is we're developing a brand new application to simplify documentation, but also help inspect your running applications. So what I'm going to do over here is I'm going to go ahead and switch over to an application. Let me go ahead and pull up this. That we call Workbooks and the Inspector. So normally, when you go to a documentation page, you have to read line by line, copy and paste, file new, do all this work. We thought there's got to be a better way. What if you just had like a markdown file that you could run live? So in this example, I'm actually just messing around with some of the animation properties on an Android application. So I have the Android emulator over here. This is the one that's shipped with Visual Studio based on Hyper-V. And I can read through how to get started. Like, there's a bunch of using statements I need. There's an activity, and here's all these clocks that I have. That's super fancy. And then this is how you kind of create the clocks. All right, that looks good. I don't really care what it says. I just want to run it, right? Then it says, here's all these animations. This is what I want to do. I should be able to scale, rotate, do translations. So I'm going to come down here to the bottom where it's like, hey, everything's good. I'm going to hit Shift Enter. This is going to run the entire application live from a markdown file, all in C# built with Xamarin over here. So I ran through the exercise. I'm actually running this. And it says, hey, why don't you mess around with a few other properties, maybe the degrees, for instance, and add a new rotation on here. So I can come back up to the live code where I'm animating this. And I'll say, yeah, alpha it in. And then I'll say rotate. And there's a rotation that's all powered by Roslyn. We'll say, let's rotate and begin at 90 degrees, or rotate it to 90 degrees. So I'm just going to go ahead and do that again. Now everything's rotated 90 degrees. And I have to debug an application. I have to do anything like that to mess around and learn the APIs. I can go ahead and change, and oh, let's do that over, you know, 4 seconds. How does that look? Terrible. Perfect. All right, so that's no good. Let's change that back, and let's get back to our original state. There we go. And we can go ahead and rerun this. And now anyone can actually give you a markdown file. When you go to our documentation, you'll find workbooks associated right with the full projects to get you learning even easier. It's amazing.
Cool.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks, James. Yeah. We can switch back to the slides real quick. I gotta say, for someone who hasn't slept in the last 24 hours, that's a pretty high energy demo.
So it's all that Starbucks coffee.
I'm seeing it for the first time as well, since we had no time to rehearse because he landed at 5:45 a.m. this morning. You know, the cool thing about what James just showed you is you can now take advantage of this. And so anyone that knows Visual Studio, that knows C# can now build great iOS and Android applications as well, all in the same IDE that they're familiar with. And one of the things that we just announced that we're super excited about is we're including the Xamarin functionality now into every copy of Visual Studio. Not just the Enterprise or Professional Edition, but even the free VS Community Edition. And so you can now take advantage of everything that he just showed as well. The new emulator capability that's integrated in, I think we're actually releasing publicly very shortly. And everything else in terms of core capabilities and designer experience is available even today. So the cool thing about that Xamarin provides is it's not just a development experience like you saw here, where you can build great mobile apps using C#. But it also provides kind of more of a bunch of services that enable you to deliver a complete mobile application lifecycle. In particular, Xamarin has a fantastic test cloud, which you saw highlighted, say, Snapchat, for example, Slack and Pinterest talked about it in that video, where even if you're not using Xamarin and C# to build your mobile applications, you can take advantage of the test cloud to run any type of solution, native Xcode, an Android Java solution, React Native, HTML Cordova, any of those types of solutions, you can upload them in the Xamarin Test Cloud and take advantage of literally thousands of physical hardware devices that we have in our Test Cloud to basically run and simulate your applications entirely across them without you having to own them. It enables you to drive much higher quality, again, gets much more agility, and it makes for a really cool, amazing experience. And I'm going to pass it back to James to highlight what you can do with it.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Yeah, so let's go switch back to my machine one more time. Yeah, we were actually had the pleasure and the privilege to actually work on this amazing application called My Driving. It ties together all these amazing things Scott's been talking about with Azure, including IoT hubs and machine learning and all these crazy things in Azure, but also ties them in to IoT devices. So the idea is we all have cars. I don't, actually. I have Zip cars that I rent. But the idea is that I could shove an OBD sensor into a Zip car and make it all smart. So we built out an application called My Driving. It's completely open source that you can grab today. And I'm going to launch it here. And the first thing we can see is that Hockey app is telling me that there's an update. We'll ignore that. And I'm simulating a drive from somewhere in downtown Seattle over to Microsoft Building 25, one of my favorite buildings. It's quite lovely. The .NET team's there, that's why. So I can go in and I can start recording this. And I don't have an OBD sensor plugged into my Samsung here, but we'll use the simulator. And this is going to go off. And this is a full Xamarin-built application. So not only can you build simple things, these are really complex applications. So I'm going to go ahead and stop this. We'll save that up. And this is going to synchronize it right now automatically with Azure, the entire Azure backend. So here I can go into my past trips, and I can come in, and I can see all the different things that are going on. And let's look at a drive that I recently took. Here we go. And what's cool is that all the sensor data is coming from my device, so I can see gallon usage, a load on my engine, kind of analyze how I'm driving. And let's take a look at that. We can look at my profile here. There we go. So I'm okay. That's why I don't own a car. But I did drive a lot, so that's good. And it'll analyze your hard stops, hard accelerations, really cool. So we needed a way, as we were building this, it was a very short cycle, about 6 to 8 weeks running up to build, to ensure that we were getting quality kind of in the DevSecOps side of things and not adding any regressions. It was a large distributed team working on many things. So what we wanted to do is enable the ability to test this application across a wide range of iOS and Android devices, and that's where the test cloud comes in. So for any one of these screens, let's just take the current trip. Let's say we wanted to automate user interface of starting a recording and stopping a recording. Here's the application over here inside of Visual Studio. And we can see all the different projects that are in here. So we have iOS, Android, and a UWP application. It's a very simple test, essentially kind of describing the pages that you want to display. So navigate to the current trip screen, start a recording, stop a recording, and save the trip. But let me go ahead and show you what one of these looks like if I actually go to the definition. Here what we can see in my setup script is I simply say, what are the identifiers that I've set on those different controls? So there's an edit text, button one, great names, UI button, okay. All right, so you can say what it's set up on iOS or Android. And then you say tap, pinch, take a screenshot, zoom, navigate. And then you can analyze the entire screen and assert, just like you would use with NUnit, for instance, to assert to make sure everything is happening correctly. So then you have all your tests. You're ready to go. And you can run them completely for free on a simulator or a local device. But of course, in our case, we wanted to take advantage of one of the 2,300 unique devices that are out there between iOS and Android, running all different flavors all the way back into Froyo. It's this huge, immense library. You can go in and search for anything. Let's see if there's a 6P, which is my device that I have. There we go. And you can click on it, get detailed information, and see how many are available. We have 9 of these, for instance. But then what you do is you take the application, you shove it up into the test cloud, and that's where the power is. We tied this all into VSTS, which I'll show you in a second, and we can see I have these series, and this is every single feature branch in either TFS or Git. And here's my regression that gets run every night against 20 different devices for iOS. So I'm going to go ahead and tap in on one. Here's the record trip, and here are the real physical devices. I can zoom out. I can go ahead and zoom in a little bit here on a specific device. I can scroll down and see CPU usage, memory usage. So if I start scrolling down, as I scroll down, you'll see the left-hand side that I'm actually scrolling down and executing these steps and then ensuring that they show up. I can see, is there a spike in memory? Is there a spike in CPU usage? Well, let me go look at the console log that's coming in. Let me get a full screenshot of the or a device log. And of course, you can run those tests, of course, over on Android. So here's our Android, and there's a nice circle icon there. And I selected there were some failures here, which was kind of a bummer. So here's my failures. And we looked like we had something in the record trip. And we can easily see what this application is looking like on all the different devices. Go to save trip. And it crashes on my phone. That's embarrassing. So let's see what happened. I can go, of course, get the same detailed information, but get a stack trace. And we can see in here that there was a null reference exception, just a .NET exception somewhere in one of my fragments, and it tells me specifically exactly where I need to go, almost to the exact line where the fade animation was started. I can now take that back into my application, and something must have broken the latest versions of Marshmallow, and update it and fix it. And the power is the end-to-end of getting it there. We host all of this in VSTS. It's actually hosted on GitHub, so every single time we commit into GitHub, pulls on the latest code and gets built for iOS, Android, and UWP, one place for all of my applications. Over here on the left-hand side in Visual Studio Team Services, you'll see all my applications being built up, and that's not good. Some failures. This is real code. This is really happening. And you can see all the different branches. I have regression suites that get run every single night and different feature branches. So if I go into my feature branch, I can look at these steps. So here, for instance, we do some command lines, we enter our credentials, we build the application, package it, ship it to Test Cloud, boom, I'm there. When I'm ready to release it, I hit the release tab, I come over here and I deploy it. We can take a look at the deploy script, which pushes it automatically to Hockey App, and I can then deploy it automatically to all my testers when I'm ready, so they can give me feedback on my applications. Full end-to-end, building, testing, and deploying your applications, all from never leaving Visual Studio. It's magical.
Awesome. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Scott. Cool.
The thing that we're looking to enable is, kind of as James mentioned, this sort of end-to-end DevOps experience where you can basically, you know, work in any editor with any tool. You can upload into the cloud. We provide source control repository for both Git and TFS-based hosting. You can do build and deployment and take advantage of that massive capacity in Azure to automatically build all your code and not have to, you have to set up your own build server to do it. But we've got an integrated build environment so that we can actually, you can take, whether it's a raw Xcode, whether it's a Xamarin app, whether it's an ASP.NET app, whether it's a Java app, deployed whether it's in the cloud or on premises, you can basically use our build and deployment mechanisms, you can simulate load, you can use the device testing cloud to automatically run mobile apps in there, and then take advantage of a full release management experience. All these things can be used independently, or they're all nicely stitched together and can provide incredibly rich, powerful set of offerings. Now, you can use this environment, again, to not only build cloud or mobile applications, but to build any type of application out there. If you've got a Win32 application that's connecting to a VMware environment back on-prem, you can take advantage of this environment in order to help automate your development process there as well. One of the companies that's taking advantage of this is Shell, which is one of the largest IT organizations in the world. They've got thousands of developers and tens of thousands of people in Shell IT. And they just recently moved all of their engineers to take advantage of Visual Studio Team Services, running entirely in the Microsoft Cloud. What I thought I'd do is just walk through a quick video of their experiences of what it's been like using it.
Shell's overall mission is to be the most innovative and competitive energy company in the world. By 2050, our population is around 9 billion. And for that, we need a lot more energy than we need today. Technology will clearly help Shell in meeting these challenges.
We have about 2,800 software developers working day in, day out.
Our overall strategy is to move everything to the cloud as soon as we can.
We gathered up our Team Foundation Server databases, sent them off to Microsoft where they ran their high fidelity migration processes and transformed it all into Visual Studio Team Services.
I was pretty unenthused when I heard we had to move to Visual Studio Team Services. Any change is hard. The rollout was phenomenal. We were able to just log on, update, move to the new system. I didn't have to rebuild my code. It's just really easy to work with.
Our software being developed for various platforms. It could be for Linux, for Windows, for Apple iOS, for Android, for other type of devices. So having access to the latest software releases is very important to us.
Now with Visual Studio Team Services, every 3 weeks there's new functionality without us even noticing it.
We're no longer running our servers. We've removed all of that cost.
Obviously, going to the cloud, people are mostly concerned with security. So the fact that the Visual Studio Team Services had their ISO certification in place was a great benefit for us.
Digitalization will transform every part of the company. It will overlay our physical world and make it one world, whether in the subsurface space, whether in the refining space, whether in the trading space, whether in the consumer space. It will transform the whole company.
One of one of the things that that makes this sort of story great is not just the development experience that you've seen, but also then the ability to take the back end of those mobile experiences and those web experiences and run them using Azure. We've got a great service we call Azure App Service, which makes a really great way that you can host the back ends for whether it's mobile, web, business logic applications, or API apps. And it works for all languages. So you can use it with .NET, you can use it with Java, Node.js, PHP, Python, and more. It has built-in auto-patching and auto-scale capabilities, so you don't have to kind of constantly patch or manage your VMs. The service does it for you. It provides great integration with existing apps, so if you want to talk to a back-end app that's already deployed in your corporate environment or a SaaS-based application hosted in the cloud, you can easily do that. And it has built-in continuous deployment support. You know, as an example here, you can deploy applications directly from your IDE or command line of choice, or as I mentioned, you can integrate it with continuous integration. So it's like James showed you with Visual Studio Team Services. You can set up App Service to automatically deploy apps from it anytime you check in code and those tests pass. You can also pull it from GitHub or Bitbucket or other code hosting environments as well. The auto-scale rules are set up so that basically you can configure the environment so that when you see a ton of load, it'll automatically spin up new virtual machines and infrastructure to host that application. So you get a ton of load, you can scale up as high as that you want to go. And the beauty is when your load starts dropping, it can automatically turn off those resources and enable you to save money. It has built-in connectivity back to on-premise environments, so you can connect through a virtual network or a gateway to any existing application you already have deployed on-premises and easily enable connectivity back and forth to it. And we also support what we call SaaS integration. So it's built-in hooks, so if you want to do OAuth security against Dynamics CRM or Salesforce or Workday or Concur or any other application that your company's adopted, you can easily stitch that together and enable seamless end-to-end support. What I thought I'd do is just show off a quick demo, a couple things of that in action, to highlight what you can do with it. So I could go into our Azure Management Portal here, and I could very easily create a new Azure App Service environment, just because we're running a little late. I already did that. I can take advantage of it. And so I have one here called Scott Goo Demo App 1 that I'll be taking advantage of as part of this demo. So I basically just created it the same way you saw me create stuff earlier. I can then go into Visual Studio here, and I've got an ASP.NET app. This is just a vanilla ASP.NET MVC application that I've just created, so it's kind of a Hello World app. What do you want to call this application? Silence in Orlando. There we go. And deploying this thing is easy. As I mentioned, you can wire it up to continuous integration and servers or build servers like Visual Studio Team Services or GitHub or Bitbucket. We also just make it really easy that you can right-click directly inside Visual Studio, go ahead and hit publish. And this basically just enable direct publishing from your IDE, which is sometimes good when you're getting started or just trying to spike out a quick concept. The deployment of this thing is pretty fast. So this is basically deploying the entire application. It just uploaded it into the cloud. It's spinning up the environment right now that I configured to run it in. And it should, in about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ooh, I timed it perfectly. There we go. It's now up and running. And just to prove it's real, I click the About. There is silence in Orlando. So that's how easy it is to basically deploy and provision things. If I want to go back now into the environment here, I can do a whole bunch of different things as part of this. I could go ahead and, let's set up our scaling rules, because this is going to be a super popular app, I can tell. And so I can basically configure what's called our scale out settings. And right now, I just have a single manual VM instance, which is the default out of the box. If I wanted to, I could say, hey, I want to run this across 3 VMs. I could manually use the slider or programmatically change it to scale up or scale down however I want to. Or, the better approach that we recommend is use auto-scale. And so I could go ahead and instead say, either based on schedule or just based on CPU, run this thing across, let's say, between 1 and 8 VMs. And let's configure the VM so that they basically stay within about a 20 to, let's call it, maybe 80% range. So that's, you can see right there. And so basically, if my CPU ever goes above 80%, Azure will automatically spin up a new VM to basically handle more load. If it ever drops below 20%, Azure will start turning off VMs so I can basically keep in that 20 to 80% equilibrium. And the beauty is I don't have to take any actions. If I want to, I could be notified by email, or I can set up a webhook if I wanted to configure, you know, some other pager or some other notification for me to do it. And then all I need to do is hit save. And again, it takes about 5 seconds in order to configure and save that setting. And it's now saved. And now my VM is basically, or my app service is now going to automatically scale up and scale down now depending on load. There's a lot more hooks and tricks that I could go ahead and take advantage of. If I wanted to, for example, again, you know, move away from deploying directly from Visual Studio right-click to make it a little bit more of an automated build environment. Again, I could easily connect it to Visual Studio Team Services, to GitHub, to Bitbucket, or any other code hosting repository. And then App Service will automatically listen to changes when it sees that something's been checked in, automatically deployed into production. And then I could also go ahead and, if I wanted to, wire up what we call App Insights, which is another built-in feature of Azure. And what this is going to do is basically monitor my application here and show me as I'm actually using it, say in the browser, navigating around. It can actually give me real-time telemetry on what's happening inside this system. So if I wanted to, for example, see page load time on the client side, this will actually show me the DOM processing for all my clients hitting it, what the performance has been like. If I want to see server request processing, I can actually, again, see in real time what's happening in my application, which pages are being hit. And I can even go ahead and drill down into individual pages and see if it was calling a database or some other resource, how long each of those calls was taking. And it will automatically even notify me if, hey, your database is suddenly looking slow. It can automatically proactively send me an email and give me an alert right out of the box and notify me to do it. And so I now have an integrated dashboard. Great way to basically host my applications. And you know, the beauty is, again, I can take advantage of all that productivity straight out of the system and be able to take advantage of it immediately. In addition to hosting web and mobile applications, really excited that today we released our general availability, our Azure Container Service, which has been in preview the last 6 months. This enables you not just to host web and mobile applications, but also be able to upload any Docker-based application written in any language and be able to host it on top of our infrastructure in a way very similar to that app service, but genericized, so it doesn't even have to be a UI responsive app. It can basically run any arbitrary code you want, all again hosted within Docker. Our container service has built-in support for things like Marathon and Swarm and Mesosphere and Mesos right out of the box, and so you can configure and stand it up. You can run it on both Linux and Windows Server-based VM containers, and it will run both in Azure as well as on-premises within Azure Stack. And it provides a great environment that, again, enables you to scale and manage any type of code, not just web and mobile backend like I just demoed there. And that's now available, again, in general availability form to take advantage of everywhere. So there's lots more capabilities that we could talk about, IoT, media, streaming, a whole bunch. I thought I'd just close real quickly and talk about some of the data and analytics capabilities and services that Azure provides as well. Azure has built in as managed services a whole bunch of great database options. We've got a relational database service that we call SQL DB that basically enables you to stand up a relational database, as you saw me earlier at the beginning create, and it will take care of things like backup. It'll take care of things like disaster recovery, and it can provide a whole bunch of other built-in capabilities straight out of the box. One of the cool capabilities in particular is something that enables you to do what we call kind of fault-tolerant geoscale replication, where you can basically configure that database so that you can run in multiple regions around the world, and you can automatically enable failover or basically read replicas that can either offload your read access or enable you to basically run the application closer to your users anywhere else around the world. And the way this basically works, it's simple to configure, is anything you write or read into database one will automatically be replicated by Azure into another database, again, in whatever region around the world you want to configure it to. You can have any number of applications read that secondary application. And then if you ever want to change the write master, you basically either fire a command or go into the portal and just change you know, which is the right capability. So for example, let's say you had a problem with your database, you could automatically fail over the primary to a different system and then basically drive all traffic to that. And the beauty is it's out of the box, seamless. Again, it takes about 5 minutes to configure and set up. and enables you to build much more highly available applications at scale running anywhere around the world. Other cool database set of services that we provide is in the NoSQL space. And so we provide, for example, a great JSON-based document store. We have got a great Redis service out of the box. And we've worked with many other partners to basically have them deliver their offerings as a service as well. Our DocDB is a great service in particular if you're looking for NoSQL. It's a fully managed NoSQL database. It can seamlessly scale from gigabytes to hundreds of terabytes of data being stored underneath it. And it provides incredibly high performance. You can literally throw millions of operations per second against it and have it respond within sub 10 millisecond latency. And it supports not just sort of insert retrieve operations, but you can also do schematized queries across any JSON document stored within it, again, with super fast latency. We did a whole bunch of updates recently that make it even more attractive, including even better pricing and scaling options. You can now scale, for example, compute and storage independently. So if you want to store hundreds of terabytes of documents, but you only scan them fairly infrequently, you can optimize for that. Or if you just have a small amount of data, but you basically throw a lot of load at it, you can independently scale the compute meter as well. This gives you even more attractive pricing, and I think we have now the best NoSQL pricing on the planet in terms of as an option from a cost-effectiveness perspective. The same way that you can scale out those databases and enable automatic geo-failover for SQL databases, you can also now do that for NoSQL databases as well. Again, this is built into the service and enables you to kind of scale out even further. And it also has now built-in support, not just for the existing DocumentDB API, but we also just added MongoDB support to it as well. And so if you know MongoDB or you've got a MongoDB-based library, you can automatically point it at our DocumentDB service, and it just works. And we basically implement the full MongoDB protocol underneath it. Parse.com was a pretty popular mobile backend service that Facebook had. They just recently announced they're shutting it down. One of the things that's cool is you can now take your Parse app, you can deploy it into Azure App Service, which I showed you earlier, point it at DocDB, and it just works. You don't have to change a single line of code in order to actually enable that because of this protocol capability. Lots of people are using DocDB. We looked at a whole bunch of enterprise apps earlier. I thought it might be fun to end on a more fun game app that's also running on Azure. This is called the Walking Dead No Man's Land. Anyone here watch the Walking Dead series? Great. This was the number one app in the Apple App Store, which is means that a lot of people, hundreds of millions of people using it. And they do over 1 billion document DB queries each day. And what's great is they get less than 10 millisecond response time at the 99th percentile, so incredibly fast performance. And they offer to put together a little video for us that talks about how the solution works and what you can do with it.
We were really proud of the fact that we are actually helping the humankind to learn how to rebel the workers and stay alive. Azure is a key part in that training. You have to be able to do that 24/7 just to be ready. Walking Dead No Man's Land is based on the AMC TV series. We can actually provide new content after each episode within 24 hours. I pretty much knew that with choosing Azure and Microsoft, I would be guaranteed with better support than I would get from any other cloud providers. We know that there's somebody there looking after us. In Azure, we have, I don't know how many hundreds of servers, but then again, why would I care? It's cloud. The latest addition that we've been starting to use in Azure is DocumentDB, which has really helped us to make our development cycles faster, and that actually enabled us to create a very engaging player versus player experience within the game. Many of the things that we would usually need when we're doing backend are already prefigured out for us by Microsoft. And we were able to deliver such a high quality, engaging game with stunning graphics, good gameplay, and reliable technology.
In addition to enabling you to kind of build operational databases and applications with either relational or NoSQL, we also have a bunch of built-in services into Azure which basically enable you to analyze that data and extract even more value out of it. So you can basically look at your data, understand what happened, why did it happen, what will happen, and then fundamentally, what should I do about it? And we literally have over a dozen now analytic-based services again, provide as a service directly in the platform that you can take advantage of to do that, ranging from BI capabilities to data warehousing to what we call a data lake, Hadoop-based processing, streaming, data catalog management, and a lot more. And you know, one of the popular services that we have here is what we call Power BI, which is a BI solution. It can run entirely in the browser. It also has an iOS and Android-based experience. And it enables you to connect to any data you have out there. If you've got an on-premise SQL database, you can actually connect it to that directly. You can host it in the cloud. You can also store and connect to any other type of system out there as well. And we enable this not just as an end-user experience, but we also just recently provided now a developer SDK so that you can create your own custom visuals that plug into it, but you can also host Power BI inside your own applications as well. And so if you're building a solution, whether it's your internal users or customer-facing, you can now embed BI and the ability to do rich reporting and interactivity directly as part of the experience. We then also have our SQL Data Warehouse service, which is a great new service we're launching that enables you to store and analyze literally petabytes of data. You can interactively query and visualize that data using Power BI or any other system, and it enables you to what we call operationalize machine learning and run very advanced machine learning algorithms on top of any of the data you store in it. And so say, let's, for example, you've got a web or mobile solution like we showed earlier. Let's say you're using app service, like I showed earlier, and you've got SQL DB that you're storing the data in. You can basically configure an automatic rule using our Data Factory offering to automatically extract that data into either a Hadoop cluster or, in this case here, a SQL data warehouse. You could pull in data from, say, a Hadoop system or maybe your log telemetry or connect on-prem data like from SAP, Oracle, or Dynamics, put it all in that data warehouse, and then the beauty is you can go ahead and visualize it using Power BI, you can run reports against it, and you can also take advantage of our machine learning capabilities so that you can look at the data to get insight from it and then basically expose back an API into your application that you can use to make your application and your end user experience even smarter. And standing up these types of workflows is incredibly easy and makes it an incredibly powerful way to build solutions that can use data to get even smarter. What I thought I'd do is my last demo here is just show a quick walkthrough of what that looks like and again, highlight how easy it is to take advantage of it. So how many people here have ever stood up a data warehouse? A few people have. How long did that take? Forever. There's a theme here. So let's go ahead and let's stand up a new data warehouse because we only have like 3 minutes remaining and walk through what it looks like doing that on Azure. So again, just like I could create a SQL database, I could create a data lake store. In this case here, I'm going to create a data warehouse. We'll call it Orlando is fun. Ooh, no one ever took that before, cool. I could go ahead and start with a blank source, or in this case here, I'm just gonna use a sample database. Again, I could deploy it anywhere I want around the world. Let's go ahead and let's deploy it, let's say in Alaska. We don't have Alaska, but we can store it in Iowa, which is close. Go ahead here, put it to the dashboard when it's done, and hit create. And so with that, we basically just kicked off the provisioning of a SQL data warehouse. This will take roughly 5 minutes, at which point we have a SQL data warehouse running in the cloud that we can scale up to basically petabytes of data if we want to, be able to store any type of data in it. So while that one's spinning up, let me just show one that I created earlier. And so you can bring it up here. Again, it's the same kind of management-like experience that you saw with some of our other services. I can see, you know, what's the load against that data warehouse. I can see the storage and I/O. Cool thing is I can scale, again, this thing independently up and down. So let's say, for example, I'm just starting out. I might want to start with a low-performance data warehouse. If I want to jack it up, say, for the end of the quarter or end of the month for reports, I can just hit that slider, hit save. And the data warehouse will dynamically scale to take advantage of more compute with zero downtime and without me having to kind of drop any data or rebuild it all elastically. It's something no other data warehouse in the cloud today can do. If I want to, for example, turn on threat detection, one of the cool things we have as a service here is the ability where I can turn on this, what we call threat detection, where I can basically say, automatically tell me if you see any SQL injection attacks happening, if you see any example of exfiltration of my data or any kind of failed logins happening. That shouldn't be happening. Automatically alert me, and I can even have an email or a webhook that fires as a security alert. Again, all those things are built into the service. And then the cool thing is if I want to stand up a BI system against this, I can point anything. I can point Tableau, I can point other things at it, or I can take advantage of Power BI. And we've got integrated support both to open up the data warehouse in Visual Studio and with Power BI, which will basically give me a full dashboard view on top of that data and allow me to run and create reports against it. And so as an example, here is sort of a blank canvas that I can take advantage of in Power BI. And what I'm going to do here is just add a few quick things on here, which is a product name, and I'll add sales amount. And on here, I'm just going to resize it here. So this is data that's being pulled directly from that. I'm going to visualize it using one of the built-in visualizations. It's not the coolest report, but it gives you a sort of simple example. What's cool here is all this data that I'm working with was not stored in an Excel file. It wasn't stored in a snapshot. This is literally going against that live data warehouse that we set up in the cloud. And so it's doing real-time aggregate queries against that data warehouse. And you know, this is an example, if I scroll up here, of one of these is. Don't save that one in that case. Or I think I even have an even cooler report somewhere here. Oh, this one here. And so this is sort of an example of a report that's been built out against that same data warehouse, where I've got, you know, a dashboard view. I can click into any of these and basically drill in more depth on top of this and stand up a full interactive report that works not just in the browser, it'll work on my mobile devices as well. And I can even have interactivity. I'm not sure why there's a fish in here, but it shows off some of the customization you can do. And you'll notice these things are live. So if I click on any one of these individual resources, notice how everything else is changing dynamically based on the selection. And the beauty is all of this is driven off that data warehouse. I can store any amount of data I want in it. It's incredibly easy to stand up, and I can start to enable some great end-to-end BI and data visualization capabilities as part of it. So we've talked about tons and tons of features today. And I could go on for another 100 hours or so showing off demos of other categories that we never even touched and other capabilities and customer stories that I could highlight. In the interest of time, though, I won't, and I will leave you to some of the breakout sessions to learn more. One thing I did want to mention just in closing is how many people here are MSDN customers today? So a lot of people are. So all the Xamarin stuff we showed, you can take advantage of. You can, even if you're not an MSDN customer, you can take advantage of that as well. The Visual Studio Team Services, you can sign up for free. The MSDN customers have additional billing credits provided for things like build and test, where you can run even more scale above and beyond the free tier. For Azure, you can also sign up for free and get a free trial. But one of the things that's cool for MSDN customers is you can also take advantage of your MSDN subscription to get permanent benefits that you can leverage as well. And so each of your MSDN levels include a certain amount per month that each developer that has an MSDN license can take advantage of. So for example, if you're a premium MSDN customer, you get $100 of Azure for free per month. That's enough to spin up 3 VMs for 16 hours every single day. You can run 80 VMs for a 20-hour load test. You can spin up to 500 web apps with a SQL database attached. All of that without ever ending a credit card or ever paying a dime. So that's all included as part of your MSDN subscription. And so, you know, highly recommend if you've got an MSDN benefit, take advantage of Azure, if nothing else, then for dev test. Get started with it, learn what you can do with it, and I think you'll be excited. Everything we showed, you can do now today. Definitely go to visit azure.com or azure.microsoft.com in order to sign up, learn more. There's some great breakout sessions on both Azure.NET, Visual Studio, Xamarin, and a whole bunch more here at the event. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you build with it. So thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy the cloud.